Blog Talk Radio.
Monstrex Radio brings you The Haunted Sea with host Scott Martis.
And hello, everybody. This is Julie Wrench in the studio here for another exciting episode of The Haunted Sea. I do have with me, of course, the one, the only Scott Martis. Scott, how you doing?
Hello, Julie. Welcome to the show again.
Yes, thank you.
Well, our guests are Wisconsin paranormal investigators Kevin and Jennifer Malik. Hello, Kevin and Jennifer.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us come on.
Sure. I've been on your show enough times. It's about time you came on mine, so.
Yes,
Kevin,
I'm looking forward to it.
I'll let you explain to people your and Jennifer's credentials, if you don't mind.
Sure. First of all, we're the hosts of Paraversal Universe, heard on WBHM, WCET, The Rift, and High Point Radio. That's a show about the unknown and unexplained. We run the Northwoods Paranormal Resource Center here in Rylander, Wisconsin. We're paranormal historians. Myself, a ufologist, and Jennifer, a demonologist. But we're totally submersed in the unknown and unexplained on many facets. We cover eight categories of the unknown. One of those is cryptid and monsters. And, of course, that includes lake monsters. And being in Wisconsin, we have a rich history of lake monsters, being that there's so many lakes in Wisconsin. So that's our perspective angle concerning this. And of course, I should also mention that about 5 years ago, the same time that the Zombie Plesiosaur Society and Anomalous Universe was formed, also Lake Monstrosities was. I think we all started our groups during that same month. But for us, what it was is we meet every week in the society, and it was brought up that there were no lake monster groups on Facebook. And like I said, this being 5 years ago, and we have four members of the society who are also fishing guides professionally, which is rare in itself, I think, for paranormal societies, but for us in the Northwoods, it is what it is. So we thought, between the collective experience between being on the water, but also with the unknown and unexplained, that we could do a lake monster page and do it respectably well. So we started Lake Monstrosity, and right after we started that, that's actually how we met you. Because, people get turned on to each other's stuff and we're like, wow, this is great. Zombie Pleaser Show Society. We love this.
An administrator in your group too.
Yes, you are. And exactly when we, after we met you, you were so overqualified. We were like,
well, thank you.
Would you please? You're welcome. I mean, yeah. So, we have a handful of administrators now, all of which have you know, stakes in the world of lake monsters and just mysteries of the sea. Our thing is aquatic mysteries and wonders of all kinds. So fortunately, the group is done pretty well, and we've met a lot of people. I can say before Lake Monstrosities, Lake Monsters, I didn't excel in that. You know, it was actually a weaker point of mine. Since Lake Monstrosities, 5 years later, it's actually, I've learned so much that I feel it's a stronger suit, you know, opposed
to... Yeah, well, it's networking. It's what it is. It's like, you know, you get with other people that know something that you don't know, and then you pass something on to them that they don't know, and it's networking, you know. It's sharing of knowledge.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're fortunate that we, you know, to date, it's the... I think it's the largest Facebook group out there for aquatic mysteries and wonders. And I think that's in part because we cover so many topics. You know, ghost ships and USOs. And, you know, there's Atlantis, and the list is a long one.
Yep.
But, and like I said, we have other administrators on there. Right now, there's something I'd like to plug quick if we get a chance.
Absolutely.
And that is, we have one of our administrators, Lawrence D. Meza, who is an exceptional artist.
Friend of mine, too.
Yes. His son, Daniel, suffers from Dravet syndrome and has seizures on a regular basis. Now, we didn't have a logo for Lake Monstrosities. And one day, Lawrence sent me a picture that his son had painted, named Daniel, who was seven or eight. He had painted this picture with watercolors of lake monsters, different kinds. And it was such an amazing picture. And I should also mention Jeff Stenz, who's the co-founder of Lake Monstrosities. He is one of the members of our team. As well,
fishing guy,
also a paranormal investigator, big time fishing guy. They call him the crappie king. He's one of these grandmaster anglers that's internationally recognized. We're very fortunate that he's on the team. So we were all talking. Jeff was like, "Wow, like, you know, can we use this? You know, this is amazing." And Lawrence and Daniel like, absolutely. So we use their picture for our logo for Lake Monstrosities, and. The idea came up, why don't we, you know, because Lawrence has done so much for Paraversal Universe. He's the graphic art director for Paraversal Universe.
Well, he's done some art projects helping me, too.
Right, yeah. He does great work.
Absolutely. He's
one of the premier cryptid artists. And, you know, we thought, why don't we take that picture and put it on T-shirts? We could... sell the T-shirts, Lake Monstrosities. Yes, it would promote the group, but we could also give half the proceeds back to Lawrence and his family to offset the medical costs and all the stress. You can never offset all of that, but, you know, do what we can. In other words, we thought it would be a great way to give back for what the Demises have done for us and for the aquatic cryptid community. For that matter, and so right now, if you go to the Facebook group page Lake Monstrosities, the pinned post is of that T-shirt, and I don't know how long we'll be offering that for, but we are about to send in an order now to have printed up. So, and that, like I said, half the proceeds that are garnered from that go to Lawrence and the family, and then the other half go back into making more shirts. So it's
for a good cause. Yep.
It is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And thank you for letting me plug that. I appreciate that.
I've ordered one.
Yes, you have.
Absolutely. So now, if you want, we'll get into the lake monster discussion. one thing I would like to add is that as many big lakes as are in the boundaries of Wisconsin, the western boundary with Minnesota is the Mississippi River, and the eastern boundary of the state of Wisconsin is largely Lake Superior and Lake Michigan, two of the Great Lakes. And there
Correct.
Are reports from both places, including the lakes inside the state boundaries in the state itself.
Minnesota, if you look at their license plate, it says the land of 10,000 lakes. I think we have, technically, I think we have more lakes than 10,000. In fact, I know we do. But, yeah, for sure, Minnesota, Wisconsin, tons of lakes, thousands of lakes. And like you said, you got Lake Superior. And a good place to start, Lake Superior, Trassy, right?
Yeah.
That's the name of their
the Lake Superior monster.
Lake monster. You know, and I was looking at some of the reports. There was actually a report that goes way back where a man, they likened it to, it's the only one that has the only one I come across that the reports in Wisconsin were, they had mentioned it could have been an octopus because supposedly this giant tentacle had come upon one of the ships in Duluth in the port. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. None of the other reports are of octopi. They are your traditional lake monster, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's two different kinds, right? You have the more serpentine kind, right? Like Ogopogo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Nessie kind, or chimp.
Plesiosaurus, long-necked creatures with a large body. Yeah.
Right. Now, it seems like half the lake monsters in Wisconsin are of one kind, and half are the other kind, generally speaking. Except for that one report I just talked about, which was, you know... Go ahead.
When I was doing research, looking into some of this to prepare for this show, the Noah Voss, I'm sure you've heard of him.
Absolutely.
Has a website.
Co-authored.
Yeah. Right. Co-authored the Pepe book about the Lake Pepin monster. Anyway, on his website, most of the lake monster reports he had lined up there were of your standard normal, you know, type that you're just talking about. However, there were a couple that sounded like either a Bigfoot in the water or something along the lines of a mer-being, one of these, you know, creatures from the Black Lagoon-like creatures that people report occasionally. But the vast majority of them sound like they were talking about, you know, standard lake monsters. And there's a few giant fish that get mixed up in this too, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
You've got sturgeon,
of course.
You've got sturgeon, you've got big muskies and pikes, you've got the paddlefish, which is basically a type of sturgeon, what they call a spoonbill. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's a freshwater filter feeder is what it is, which is extremely rare. And you got big catfish, too. So I'm sure that probably a lot of these large fish, at least some of the more marginal monster reports, they're responsible for, most likely.
Yeah, my cousin, actually, when we were kids, of all lakes, Big Muskie Lake in Springstead, Wisconsin. The lake is named Big Muskie, and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
It has record-sized muskie in there.
Yeah.
When we were kids, my cousin was down by the dock, and she was kicking her feet in the water, and she got bit by a muskie. Came up and bit her on the floor. It was such a big deal the Chicago Times, the Chicago Tribune had come all the way up from Chicago to report on it. It was a big deal. Well, you know, girl gets attacked by a muskie in the lake. perfect story for newspaper.
Well, I got a set of teeth like a barracuda. They're basically look like a freshwater barracuda.
They grow basically to the same size. In Managua, for many years, the bar is no longer there, but there was a bar called S.A. Loon's, and they had a recipe of the biggest muskie ever found, which was DNR in Wisconsin, who poked on a duck. I think it was 72 inches, if memory serves.
I've heard of them eating ducks before. There's stories of sturgeons, big sturgeons eating birds too at the surface.
Yeah, and the sturgeons get bigger than the muskies for sure. You know, like on Lake Tomahawk around here, sturgeon hunting or sturgeon fishing, I should say. You know, depending on what season and what they're using. I know, like in like Winnebago, they spear them. But up here, they use inner tubes as bobbers. These fish get so big that they'll actually use a human inner tube, you know, like a tire inner tube. That you blow up and you throw out in the water and can sit in. So
amazing.
Well, between the sturgeons in Lake Winnebago and the ones in Lake Champlain, the population in Lake Champlain is endangered. They're protected. The ones in Lake Winnebago are thriving, and they're not protected anymore. So that's why people are legally allowed once a year to go spearfishing for them.
Right.
The ones you see at the aquarium at Lake Champlain at the Echo Center are actually from Lake Winnebago because they don't want to take them out of the lake because they're so rarely seen. But these fish are known to get 7 feet in length at least, possibly as much as 10 feet. They're just not sure, but there have been verified ones that were 7 feet long, so big fish.
Big old, yeah, and from way back, you know.
Yep, dinosaur days.
Yep, I mean, they're living dinosaurs. Technically, but, you know. But, yeah, for sure. And Lake Winnebago is Wisconsin's largest lake. And it's, aside from the Great Lakes, it's one of the bigger lakes in the U.S.
Well, I was able to find one monster report from Lake Winnebago. I've got it brought up here on the computer. I'll be willing to read it if you want me to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I forget what website this is from, but it says the Lake Winnebago water monster. Let's see. That's a giant sturgeon. Okay, let's see. When the Winnebago tribe had its villages on the shores of the lake, they would tell stories of a very large fish, which most people assume was a sturgeon. In Wisconsin, we've seen some pretty big sturgeon, like the one shown here, but this one was monstrous and had an appetite to match. The legend tells of how the freakish fish would wade along the shoreline, snatching up deer, elk, and even moose who stopped at the edge of the water to drink. He would eat them horn, hides, and hoofs and all. None of the Winnebago, which was the tribe, would cross the channel or swim near it for fear of the monster in the lake. Years went by, and then one day some men spotted a dark form floating in the water. It was the monster. They hauled it to shore and found the cause of death to be antlers that had pierced the fish's belly. It seems the monster's prey had its revenge in the end. Many people believe descendants of the Lake Winnebago monster still live in the lake. Yeah. So it's famous for its sturgeon. But now some of the other monsters reported from the lakes around Wisconsin don't sound like sturgeons.
A lot of them don't.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's as far as like when we talk about lake monsters, and not referring to like mermaids or any what we would call semi-human, but we're talking like this, you know, either the Loch Ness monster type or a giant snake type.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're right, and I think sturgeon, as far as the giant snake type, I could, you know, there's that one classic picture we always see in the lake monster groups of that sturgeon that someone, had shot up close, swum right up to him. Perfect example, you know.
Or
I can see where someone
that's an ocean-going white sturgeon from the Pacific, and they swim up rivers occasionally. And that's where that picture is from. Probably the Columbia River or the Fraser River, I would imagine.
So we have.
Let's see. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we have. I want to say, there are 15 different lakes in Wisconsin that have boast of lake monsters or have lake monsters. Of them, I got a list here of 10 of the most prominent ones. I should do a shout out to Chad Lewis, the paralogian who wrote the book Lake Monsters of Wisconsin, and also to folklorist Charles Brown, who was Chad Lewis was able to get a lot of the reports for his book from Charles Brown.
Now, is this the guy that wrote the folklore paper from 1942 about Wisconsin sea serpents?
Yes, I believe it is.
I think it is.
I believe it's him. And and then of course Chad Lewis co-wrote the book with Noah Voss that you had brought up, Lake Pepe, the Lake Monster on Mississippi River. And that's probably a good place to go next.
If people are looking at the slideshow, we have a few photographs that are alleged to be of Pepe and also Pressy. And my friend Matt Showalker was kind enough to let me use his illustration of the Lake Superior Monster, which is really nice. slideshow.
So Pepe is probably Wisconsin's most famous lake monster. Pepe and Pressy, for sure. But Pepe, they have a Pepe festival every year. In Lake Pepin. For anyone listening, Pepe is the name of a lake monster for Lake Pepin, which is part of the Mississippi River. 23 miles long. There are actually many similarities between that stretch, or Lake Pepin, and Lake Okanagan and Loch Ness. They're both long, or they're all long, skinny, So I find that interesting. A lot of these lakes, I don't know why that is. Not all of them, but, certainly.
They generally share a history of being gouged out by moving glaciers during the Ice Age. And then all that ice melted and flooded, and in some places, like Lake Champlain, the sea actually was able to come in, and marine animals came in. And you still have, apparently, bull sharks, which can tolerate fresh water, that swim up the Mississippi River. And I was able to find a few isolated reports. I don't know how reliable they are, of them getting into Lake Michigan and, being found.
Right. So Pepe, they have this festival, or they've had it in the past. And people come out and they spend the weekend or whatever, celebrating Pepe. Chad Lewis will go out there and speak, about it, and they'll have other speakers out there. And then in the evening, they go on a riverboat, which is haunted, and do the ghost thing during the evening for this festival they do. And because of that, I think that's one of the reasons actually why Pepe is so well known. It's just because there's so much energy put into it that way.
Yeah.
And with almost all of these lakes, in fact, with all these lake monster reports, they go back to Native American legends.
Yep.
I mean, these are nothing that were just, these are not what you would call urban legends in the sense that they were recently created and not real or from real accounts.
Well, there are a couple of photographs allegedly of Pepe. Probably the one I was able to find out the most information about was one from 2004. And it's in the slideshow there.
Yeah, and there is, I was just looking at a picture before the show of Pepe.
There's an alleged photograph of Pressy, too, from 1977. I've also put that in the slideshow.
The mysterious, there's a book written about Pressy, the lake monster. It's called The Mysterious North Shore by Kate Barthel and William Mayo. And aside from the octopus report, like I said, I don't even know why I brought that up. I mean, because of the attention it got.
There are weird things, you know, reports of freshwater cephalopods. Back around the turn of the 20th century, there's a lake in the middle of New York State, one of the Finger Lakes called Lake Onondaga, and somebody found a handful of dead squids, little squids, in Lake Onondaga, and nobody's completely explained that away to this day. And
sure.
The best answer anybody could come up with is that it was discarded fishing bait by somebody that threw it in a river or threw it in a lake, but there's no proof of that.
Well,
so
you're right, like a very small percent of the lake monster.
And then you've got,
you've
heard of the Oklahoma octopus, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. There's another example. But allegedly, cephalopods are not supposed to be able to tolerate freshwater conditions because of their osmoregulation.
Right. And Lake Superior is cold.
But who knows, you know?
Right. But anyways, yeah, so Pepe, and then actually of all the lake monsters, according to Lewis, Lake Michigan gets more reports for monster sightings every year, at least the ones he collects.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Well, the photograph in the slideshow of alleged to be a Pressy, here's the background information on it. It says, a Memorial Day weekend in 1977, a certain Randy Brown snapped a photo of the Lake Superior monster. He looks like a giant serpent swimming in the waters. Brown said that it undulated just like a serpent in the water. However, the snapshot he took shows a blurry object. So as the slideshow is going through, you'll see my friend's artwork of the Pressy monster, and in that same montage of images is the photograph from 1977, and it looks like maybe the head of something flush from the water kind of looks maybe sort of like the head of a sperm whale or possibly maybe some kind of a bulky-looking plesiosaurish looking creature.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she found one.
And then there's
photos.
There's one of the Pepe photos. I'm trying to dig up the information on it. Let's see here.
I don't know if they're going to do a Pepe festival coming up again. I do. We were going to go out to the Pepe festival a couple of years ago. And we had a paranormal conference that same weekend they were doing that. And
yeah.
I don't know if they... I don't know about last year if they did one or not. I don't know if they do them every year.
Well, now you've got a Northern Wisconsin Paranormal Festival every year too, right?
Well, we don't do it. This year, or the last year, we had our first major paranormal conference in the Northwoods. And
maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I mean, there are paranormal conferences up here. Nothing major. Most of them are like expos, psychic fairs, that kind of thing. But then they did have a last year at in Boulder, Wisconsin, one of the casinos put on the Northwoods Paranormal Conference, which I spoke at. In fact, Chad Lewis spoke at as well. They brought in a whole bunch of people: Dave Schrader, Jeff Bellinger. There's a whole host of people there. Of course, Linda Godfrey was there. Allison Gerlin was there. It was a good time. And so, but yeah, I'd like to do, you know what would be cool, Scott, would be a Lake Monster Festival or a Lake Monster
game.
A Paracon. You know,
the only thing stopping me would be the money, getting up there and a place to stay and all that business, you know?
Right.
That was all
the
care of that.
I mean,
wouldn't have a problem, you know?
You know, and that's something where this is kind of like a seed that's been planted in my head, you know, years ago. And I know people who run Paracons, and I'm aware of some locations that would be decent or they're cost effective.
Yeah.
You know, the idea would be if you find a couple sponsors, I could put money into it so we can fly out people like Scott Martis, you know.
Yeah, that's the only thing that would stop me from coming.
Yeah, my bad. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, that would be great. And so that's something that someday I would love to see transpire.
Well, yeah, I'm game. Anything I can do to help, please let me know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and I know me and Jeff have talked about it before.
Yeah.
Jeff Stend. You know, someone else you should have on your show sometime. Man, does he got some stories about the water.
Oh, absolutely. I've definitely considered it.
And then, like I said, we had Rick Eby. He's a guide that investigates with us.
Well, you
guide
got Ted Cruas, too, right?
Who?
T. Cruas.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had him on the show before. And I've spoken
Well, he was
at
Lake Champlain with me in 2013 with us at the Champ Camp.
Sweet. Yeah, he ran he runs the Milwaukee Paranormal Conference.
Yep.
And
he read the
book, we've been out there
Monster Hunters. I'm in it.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of people. I mean, I like you said, just finding the right sponsors and finding the right location. It wouldn't take much, though. I think it could be done. So that's something that we'll have to work on.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm looking at the list. We have, of course, Lake Mendota and Lake Mendota. There's two lakes near the state capital, Madison. Lake Monona, one of the two, it's Madison's lake snake, they call it. And then Mendota has a lake monster called Bozo the lake monster. So they got reports with them. Lake Ripley in Wisconsin. There's actually, it's interesting. Some of these, like a few of these lakes, they have the lake monster, like the Ripley Lake Monster, for example. And looking for a name for it, nobody's dedicated names to some of these. I think it's amazing, actually. You'd figure every lake monster would have a name, and that's not necessarily the case. Let's see. We covered Lake Superior, and we talked about Lake Michigan. And then, of course, there's Devil's Lake, right? Anytime you hear
You know what's interesting about Devil's Lake?
That's
near Sauk City, Wisconsin. And Sauk
City,
Wisconsin. Well, anyway, Sauk City is famous for being the headquarters of Arkham House Publishing that published H.P. Lovecraft and made him famous back during the 40s and
1950s. Huh. Small world. I lived there for 3 years.
Yeah.
No, I lived there for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of photographs in the slideshow that are claimed to be of the Devil's Lake Monster. And there's one from 2004 that's alleged to be of Pepe, too.
Right. Now, anytime you hear the name Devil's, you know, Devil's Lake, Devil's Tower, Devil's Den, Devil's Cave, Devil, whatever, you know there's something to it. There's a reason for it. And it usually goes back again to the Native American stuff. In this case, their legend, they believe the lake was sacred. And their legend was of the green dragon in the lake. They felt that that was their belief, that there was a green dragon that lived in the middle of the lake. And from what I read, they were expected to give sacrifices. And after a while, they get tired of it. You know?
Well,
and you can see the name.
One confusing thing about these Indian beliefs is that some of the things that they talk about seem to be clear depictions of a large animal that lives in the water. And then some of the other things they talk about water spirits, which is not an animal per se, but some kind of supernatural, you know, spiritual entity. And,
yeah,
you know,
I believe that. Go ahead.
You have to try to distinguish between the two sometimes, you know, and it can be confusing.
Yes, it's like, well, you got the cryptozoology and then you got the paracryptozoology, which is just, you know, what you're talking about. And, you know, whether it be the big man, the Bigfoot or the dog man or whatever, even with lake monsters, you're going to have a percentage, it's going to be a smaller percentage, but there's a percentage of reports that have some kind of unusual quality to it, supernatural quality or whatever the case may be. Case in point, Loch Ness Monster. There's a really good one. You know, Aleister Crowley had property on the lake, and he was down there trying to summon all kinds of things. You know, the most evil man in the world. You know, people report strange things. Like in Lake Monstrosities, there's a lot of stuff that comes across. People have experiences that aren't always just the flesh and blood. Now, I think as far as the supernatural stuff, there's many theories in paracryptozoology, one of which being ghosts of past animals. You know, when people see Nessie, they seem the ghost of a plesiosaur. I'm not suggesting that all Nessies are ghosts of plesiosaurs, but for the few percent that have supernatural qualities to them, where if they just faded away, or maybe there was weird electronic fog, or whatever the case is, there's some element to it that is just saying there's more going on here than what you're normally used to seeing.
Another confusing thing about the Indian lore, too, is that there's a lot of Indian lore that gives supernatural powers to real animals that we know about.
Yep.
So, you know, that adds another layer of mystery to this. Are they talking about a real animal and they've put a supernatural layer of lore over the top of a real animal, like they have with bears and wolves and all this other stuff? You know, we just, at this point, I don't think anybody really knows.
Well, that's interesting, too. We one of them four guides I was telling you about in our group is Don Young, who is a Iroquois shaman. He's also a cryptozoologist and a paracryptozoologist. And, you know, for sure, you know, they're, like you said, they have different spirit animals, and or animals have different properties. And for all, you know, because their belief system and being indigenous and not being conditioned the way, like, we have been for science, they look at things from a different perspective and I believe are able to come to certain conclusions that are truth that we cannot explain conventionally, but yet are truth and do exist. They may, some of the, like, yes, they may give animals some qualities, but there also may be a chance that they have discovered qualities about certain animals through maybe shamanic means or some other mean that you can't quantify in a lab, but yet,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's there. It's there, you know. Are you going to ignore it, or can you at least look at it and acknowledge it for what it might be? I mean, because otherwise,
well,
you know, it's one or the other. You're going to ignore it.
I've read a lot about what some Native American authorities within the Native American community think about the way they've been treated by the anthropologists that study their culture. And some of them are upset with good reason by some of these academics coming to them and acting like they know more about their culture from outside than they actually do. I mean, what an insult.
Exactly.
You know?
And, you know, that actually, Don was talking about that. He experienced that in the Bigfoot community, where there were biologists and anthropologists, not all of them, but some of them, that refused to even acknowledge the spirituality involved behind the reports. I mean, doesn't mean that they need to subscribe to it, but can you at least acknowledge it and respect it, please? I mean, can you at least show some respect for it?
There's a
can you do that much?
Book that touches on this very subject that I'm talking about by the late Indian scholar Vine Deloria Jr. It's called Red Earth, White Lies. I highly recommend that book to everybody. You might not agree with a lot of some of his theories in the book, but he definitely touches on the subject about how the academics' view of their culture is very different from how the Indians within the culture view it. And this has caused a lot of problems over the years.
Right.
Yeah. One thing a lot of people don't understand is that the Native American oral tradition even recognizes the concept of extinction. They talk about animals that used to exist, that are no longer around, and they say so in their own oral traditions. So the Native Americans were cognizant of the concept of extinction hundreds of years ago. They said, well, these animals are not alive anymore, but they used to exist. Which is perfectly understandable. And you know, the academic anthropology community, I guess, for a long time tried to say that, oh, the Indians' view of the world was very naive and childish. They don't understand what they're talking about. Maybe they do understand what they're talking about, and it's just maybe it's white culture that has distorted the real Native American view. And I say this to my ancestors were Cherokee, so I think I have a right to speak on this up to a point, you know? So, anyway, but that's kind of a side branch there, but I just wanted to get some of that in, you know?
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's definitely cool.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, I find that, you know, when it comes to academia, there are nothing is perfect. Let's just put it that way. And I see examples in academia, too, where even that's flawed. And so it's like as solid as we think science is, even a lot of science is based on theory. So, you know, when I say theory, like, what do you mean? Like, well, the Big Bang is a theory. Evolution is a theory. These are theories. I believe in minor evolution. You know, I believe, like, you could take two animals, put them on two separate islands, you know, come back 20,000 years later, and they're going to be different. This is going to be different.
Yeah, because they've gone in two different directions. That's the basic principle how evolution works. But on a larger time scale, I mean, geologic time is so hard for the ordinary person to even wrap their head around. We're talking, you know, 100 million years.
But when
years,
they suggest that we're coming from amoebas, like
time spans,
I don't think that
that's
once
time spans that the human mind
over.
Can't even comprehend, really. You know, not in a concrete form. You know, you can understand it in abstract terms, but not in concrete terms, because you know, most people's idea of time is a human lifespan, you know, that they can really, really understand, you know?
There's no proof that one species can turn into another species. Like a salamander is not going to turn into a capybara. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that. I think there is evolution, but to a point. But that's just belief system.
The thing you're missing here, though, is the missing link between the amphibia and the capybara. There's a whole bunch of intermediate steps stretched out over a time span of, like, you know, 20 million years. You're just missing the missing links there. There are transitional fossils.
Well, to me, that's still the unknown, because we don't know for sure. We weren't around 20 million years ago. You know what I'm saying?
We got the bones of what was, though, you know.
Yeah, and we also have the opinions of, like you said, we got science, we got one side of opinion, which we are told is solid, but when you consider life as mind, body, and soul, but only the physical realm is being addressed, and other things, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying.
Well,
perhaps
at this point in time, we don't understand the physics of the spiritual side of it to be able to say anything for sure. You know,
we did, and it's been suppressed for an agenda, let's just say. But that's,
yeah.
I mean, now I'm going to conspiracy stuff, and this is an aquatic show, so we'll.
Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to disagree with you. I'm just trying to tell you my perspective on it, because I try to
stay. No, I understand.
In what the physical rooted in reality, you know, is generally accepted. Not to say that the fringe stuff doesn't have any validity. I think it probably does, but, you know, it's one reason it's out on the fringe is that we don't understand enough about it to really be able to make any hard judgments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my thing is, like, let's look at all of it, because I think there are good points of view and there are proper allities in all these different areas.
Mm-hmm.
There are also mistakes in all these different areas. And that includes the spirituality stuff, too. So, for sure, you know.
Well, I have an interest in all this other fringe phenomenon. It's just that I think in order to do an effective job on the one that I'm the most interested in, you know, I concentrate on it and, you know, I'm not out hunting Bigfoot or any other cryptid, I stick to creatures that live in the water. And I think because of the fact that I've chose to just specialize in the one field is one reason I've managed to be pseudo-successful at it and know so much about it. I'm not spreading myself too thin, you know. But what I'm doing is not for everybody, so, you know. I'm not casting
for sure. And we need
there,
experts.
You know? Yeah.
We need our experts. You know, and when I call you the king of plesiosaurs, I say that with respect.
I
do, because when it comes to aquatic cryptozoology, you are the top of the list in my book.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And it's because you do. You focus on your thing, and you know your thing well. There's no doubt. That's why we've had you on the show several times.
Yep.
You know,
I'd be willing to come back, you know, at any time.
Well,
I'm going to be on
we'll
Cat's.
Have you back.
I'm going to be on Cat's show May the 19th. Cat
That's
Hobson.
Awesome. She's
got
a huge following. That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a voice for Fate Magazine Radio.
Yep. Well, there you go. That could give me some good exposure. And
yeah.
Thank you for having me on all the times you've had. I mean, we've known each other at least 5 years now.
Yeah, ever since you know, we started that group and kind of put our feet into that.
Yep.
That, you know, up until that point, we hadn't done that concerning social media at all. So
well,
that's one of the things I love. I mean,
as far as I can tell, I think I've been on your guys' shows at least 4 or 5 times already.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, we had you on.
At least 4. Yeah. Because we did the one live thing from when I was actually in Vermont at the lake back in 2016
right.
or 15. And then there was one we did with me and Will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one you did with you and Katie.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then
yeah.
There was a couple few you did by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and the
in
last
fact,
one was what?
You
2 months
on
ago?
Second episode ever. What's that?
Oh, really? I was on the second episode ever. Well, that's cool.
Yep. You and Jay Cooney, or Jay Cooney.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Now I remember that.
Now, there's someone I haven't talked to in a while. I hope he's doing well.
He's busy in college. He's doing something with beluga whales. So
right.
Hopefully he'll be getting out in a year or so. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
he'll
wait for somebody to get out of jail, you know. Oh, they'll be back.
I know. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are the younger generation will be there in the future for when people like you and me aren't around anymore.
Yeah, we should be glad that we have some young people coming up behind us.
Well, every once in a while, I'll see a younger individual who you say they're going to, you know, that there's our future. Not my future. There's
absolutely
the future of the unknown and unexplained.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there's a handful out there I can think of. And for sure, that's why, in fact, James is also the youngest person we've ever had on the show, ever.
Yeah.
He was the only person we had to have parental consent to have on. But it was worth it. I mean, and for, you know, at his age, he knows more about aquatic stuff than most people.
Yeah, well, I've done my best to mentor people to the best of my ability that I can, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and every once in a while, he'll come on the ZPS and say, hey, you know, how you guys doing?
Yeah.
Every so often.
Well, back in my day, I had some really good mentors. I knew J. Richard Greenwell, who was the secretary of the International Society of Cryptozoology. I spoke to Roy Mackle a couple of times on the telephone. And
really?
So, yeah, I knew a few of the old-timers from way back to the, you know, the early days of cryptozoology, so.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Well, one thing
very cool.
I wanted to point out is that I showed you the map the other day of what North America, the Northeast, looked like 11,000 years ago when all the ice started melting. And if you'll remember on that map, all the Great Lakes were all one piece. Probably where you were living would have been underwater, and it was all interconnected, so anything could have come up from the Mississippi River or the Gulf of St. Lawrence and got in and swam as far as Alberta, Canada. So, I mean, it's just, you might as well say the whole middle part of the United States and Canada was an inland sea. And that's how all these monsters theoretically got into places like the middle of Wisconsin and Lake Champlain and all these other places.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you're talking, for each lake, it's almost like its own petri dish, if you think about it, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And
maybe some of these smaller lakes that have old stories from back in the 1800s and further back, but that you don't get modern reports from, you may have a situation where there was a small population that used to live in these lakes, but that died out because there wasn't enough fish to sustain them. Whereas in places like Lake Superior and Lake Champlain, there's still enough of a food base to support a population.
You know, that's interesting. There's one belief I have. I know Jeff Stenz shares it with me, and it's not a popular belief, and that is that there. You know, we know that it has to do with sharks, and it has to do with the Great Lakes. The Greenland shark can survive in cold weather. It's been seen in the St. Lawrence Seaway. We discussed one day, is there a possibility that it could, the Greenland shark could not or could have found its way into either Lake Superior or Lake Michigan, two very deep lakes.
Yeah.
And if they did, would we ever see them at all? Because they're,
well, they're bottom
on the bottom.
Yeah, the
right.
bottom jaw is like,
and we never
down.
Go down there. So you can have Greenland sharks. You can literally have sharks in the Great Lakes, and nobody would see them because there's no. We're not going there to, you know, we're not going to the bottom of Lake Superior or Michigan. It's not
yeah.
like, you know, we have, they have like, you know, tourism rides where, you know, come in our submarine and check out the bottom of the lake with us.
Well,
you know, so
I
who
came
knows?
Across several apparently documented cases of bull sharks in Lake Michigan. And I also came across this really strange report of two people claiming to see narwhals breaking the ice in Lake Michigan. Now, I didn't have enough time to trace this completely back to its original source, but I am going to continue to look into that. But the Lake Michigan bull shark stuff seems to be pretty legit. I mean, they found teeth, and they allegedly found one sitting inside of an underwater wreck in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
you never know.
And that's why I'm, right, and that's why I even bring up the Greenland shark. I wouldn't even suggest that had there not been reports of it found in the St. Lawrence Seaway. So,
yeah.
And people say, well, they can only get so far, and they're not going to be dis-. I'm sorry, but a fish in water is just sneaky as all heck. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? Like, I could. It would only
weird
take one
stuff
or two.
Happens.
Weird stuff happens.
My
but,
buddy,
yeah,
William
sure.
McDonald, who believes that these lake monsters are giant eels, he was a guest on the show with me and Julie
mm-hmm.
a while back.
Yeah.
And he talks about he actually kept a conger eel, which is a big oceanic eel, in fresh water. And they're not supposed to live in fresh water. But he claims he did, and I believe him, so you never know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we didn't get Jenny on more. She's sitting here nodding her head sometimes.
Let her talk for a minute. We got about 2 minutes left.
Let's get Jenny over here. We're dragging you on.
I know. I think what interested me about, you know, you talk about sharks going up in the waterways.
Mm-hmm.
The Matawan man eater.
Oh, yeah. That
happened,
in a creek in New
Jersey.
1916.
And,
yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, and for a
that
while,
was the inspiration for Jaws.
Yeah. And for a while, people thought it was a great white.
Yep.
And then it turned out, I can't remember if it was a tiger shark or a bull
the
shark.
The bull shark. It was a bull shark.
It was a bull shark.
Yeah. Bull sharks have an incredible tolerance of fresh water. Yeah. There was one swim all the way up to Alton, Illinois on the Mississippi. Well, they caught one or two of them in Illinois. Now, think about that.
Yeah, that's interesting, too.
Yeah.
You know,
but you guys are just south of the origin of the Mississippi River. It originates in Minnesota and then flows south to the Gulf.
Right. We
yeah.
are, to give people an idea where we're at, I think we're pretty much due west of Minneapolis. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
From the
like
Twin
that.
Cities.
We are.
Yes.
Yeah, we're 4.5 hours from Minneapolis, and we're 4.5 hours from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We're 2.5 hours from Green Bay, and 2.5 hours from Duluth.
Have you guys ever been up to Canada?
I was as a kid, but
yeah, I've been up
not
in
as an
Ontario
adult.
And Quebec when I was living in Vermont. And I've also been to Lake Michigan at the Straits of Mackinac. That's the
and,
only
you know,
time I've been
they
home.
Got some.
Lake
well, they got, you know, their big one is Ogopogo, right? To me, that's like the number three. You got
yeah.
Nessie, you got Champ, and you got Ogopogo. To me, them are the top
yeah.
three. I don't know about anyone else. But
yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, but Canada's got tons of lakes. That,
oh,
you know,
absolutely. And tons of lake monsters, too.
Yeah, that's what, yeah. There's stuff up there. I mean, we never go up there. I mean, once in a while,
yeah.
people go out there. But, I mean, there are areas of Canada that people never
It's such a pain in the butt to get across the border and back, you know?
Yeah.
Well, guys, I guess we've run out of time, so.
Yeah, we'd love to have
you
back if you guys
want
to do part two.
Yeah, we can either pick this up on your show or you guys can come back on my show at a later day, you know?
We'd love it.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
And thank you for having us on. And I'm sorry I did all. I apologize. I just started talking.
You got nothing to apologize for.
No,
great show.
I'm apologizing to Jennifer that I just started talking. She just waves at me like, no, I'm fine. Just keep talking. You know.
Okay. Yeah.
Gives me the okay kind of thing. But yeah, thank you for having us on.
Yes. Thank you so much for having
us on.
Well,
I enjoyed
it.
Yeah. And, I'm sure everybody else will enjoy it, too. So,
everybody go check out Lake Monstrosities, please. That's our group page. And the show Paraversal Universe. And you can find us at nwiparanormal.com. We're the NWPS, but it stands for Northern Wisconsin. It confuses everybody, I know. The easiest thing is type in Northern Wisconsin Paranormal Society. You'll find us on Facebook, and we have two websites, actually. So.
All right, guys, I guess that's it. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Scott, I will see you again on the next episode of The Haunted Sea. This is Julie Wrench for Monster X. Thank you for joining us.
Radio brings you The Haunted Sea with host Scott Martis.